Welcome to your Spiritual Besties podcast. I'm Lauren Ledoux.
And I'm Rashida McCoy. We're here to laugh, cry, learn, and connect with you.
We discuss anything and everything from our everyday lives to the magical, mystical, and woo-woo.
So take a deep breath, grab a cup of tea,
and set an intention to receive, because you deserve it, bestie. Hi, Rashida. I am pretty good. I'm very cramped up right now. And I've spent the morning trying to explain to Gemma what a period is. And she, you know, when you see mommy bleed and it's my moon, it comes every month, blah, blah, blah. And when you're a big girl, you'll have it too. And she came up to me a little while ago and she was like, I don't want to get tummy aches. And I was like, okay. Maybe I went a little bit too far.
Yeah, having to like know where the line is. I mean, because I know you and I, we definitely want to be like super open with our kiddos, like very honest from the beginning. Like same thing with Macy. She'll come in and she'll be like, oh, mommy, you're bleeding. And then she like actually wants to help. She's like, do you need something? And then she'll go, oh, when I get bigger, this is going to happen to me. And you know, I'm very fortunate. I don't have, or I really haven't had cramps. The only time I got them is when I decided to use the Mirena at one point for birth control. And so I feel for like every woman who has to go through that, because that is hard. Not to mention still having to like live life, take care of littles, especially in this time that you just want to be like curled up in the bed or on the couch and just rest. But I love that you're introducing that to her and that, you know, you're figuring out exactly what to share, what not to share. And she'll probably forget that part and you'll just revisit it, you know, over and over again until it's her time. And then you can make a big deal about it. I've been thinking about that with Macy, like, how am I going to like make it like this big, cute thing for her? Because I think it's important, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, I feel like we could talk about that.
We can. On. Yes. We'll move on. And I'll say, we're really excited because we have a return guest on the podcast. Is that our first time having a return guest?
Yes, it is. And really excited.
Yeah, this guest was one of our very first podcast episodes.
Our OG guest, yes.
Yeah. So we have with us today Rachel Cohen. Welcome to the podcast. We're so happy to have you on. Rachel is a nature-based spiritual life coach, plant connector, intuitive medium, and author. When her experiences as an environmental educator, wild animal specialist, and mother left her anxious and distraught over society's destruction of nature, Rachel cultivated a creative relationship with plants that awakened her spiritual gifts and transformed her life. She first founded Infinite Succulent, specializing in plant art connections, and then Our Infinite Nature for facilitating and growing spiritual connections with nature. She's the author of Everyday Plant Magic, Change Your Life Through the Magical Energy of Nature, which is what we focused on our previous episode with her. So I definitely recommend going back and listening. And Infinite Succulent, Miniature Art to Keep or Share. And now Self-Care for Eco Anxiety, 52 Weekly Practices for Positive Personal Change Through the Power of Nature. So welcome, Rachel. We're so happy to have you back.
Welcome.
Oh my goodness. What an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me back. That's amazing. And yeah, I'm just so happy to be here. And also, thank you for pronouncing my name correctly.
I'm trying to get the
It's hard. It's hard, which is probably why I go, like, I often introduce myself as Rachel now, because it's so difficult. And I know that people will just call me Rachel otherwise. And Rachel at least sounds more like Rachel. But thank you for that. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's hard, right? Because, you know, my name's Lauren. If I'm in the U.S., people know how to pronounce that. If I'm elsewhere, you know, it might be a little bit more difficult. But I think being able to respect people's heritages through the pronunciation of their name is like the least we can do, right? To show respect as humans, or at least to try, right? Because it isn't always easy.
Right.
Like that is not... it's not a sound that really is in the English language.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is why I think I give people grace. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I get that this is not a typical sound we make. So it's okay to go kuh instead of huh. You know what I mean? But but it is nice to practice.
Yeah. So Raquel, thank you. I would love to ask this question again, although you did answer it for us last year, but we always start with the same question, and that is, what is spirituality to you?
Ooh, what a beautiful question. What is spirituality to me? I mean, at this point, at the most basic level, spirituality is life. You know, like, I think I'm at the point now in my own spiritual journey where I see every aspect of life is in some way related to spirituality. But if I was to answer it from a standpoint of kind of just kind of getting into spirituality, getting into this kind of more that exists, then what would spirituality mean? I guess I just answered that question. Spirituality in that sense is the more that exists beyond what we are taught to see, hear, feel, or know. It's the more that we're actually very attuned to when we're young, but then we kind of like lose, and then we realize, oh, wait, I want that back, you know? So I guess that's what spirituality would mean to me if I was kind of just coming back into my journey with it, would be like really feeling into the more that exists even within our physical reality. My kids are like, pay attention to me in the background.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We're very used to it.
I actually just had a mom moment, Lauren. Like your kid came over to your side to ask for something, and I literally like looked to my side like it was my turn.
I love that. Oh my.
You're like, do I have water?
Bring all the kids. They are welcome. I know, I'm just
like, like symbiotic momming over here.
Absolutely. Well, we're a village, village apart, but we're a village.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I love your answer of something more. And I really respect and appreciate your emphasis on connecting with spirituality through nature. And you did share a lot of your journey on the previous episode of how you really stepped into your spirituality and how that connects to nature and plants and intuition for you. And I'd love to shift into this new book, this conversation around eco-anxiety and how to cope with it, I guess might be the right word. Yeah. And how did this book come to you?
It's such a beautiful question. So I'm going to start with the last part of your question, which is how did this book come to me? Because I think that's actually kind of an interesting story. So this book came to me because my editor asked me to write it. Literally. I was kind of pitching to my editor the idea of writing a book on everyday intuitive magic, kind of on the tales of everyday plant magic, based on my group coaching program where I teach people how to connect with and cultivate their intuitive gifts. So this is going to be a book that kind of shared that. And my editor was like, I love that idea. And also, how do you feel about this? We're pitching a book idea to you. So the way that most publishing houses work is they actually kind of look at some of the trends of like, what are people Googling, right? Like, what are people looking for? So that the publishing houses can be like, what are some books we should have within our inventory to help people with their inquiries, right? So they were seeing that people were really searching up eco-anxiety. People were really searching up like coping with environmental dread, you know, with existential dread of the future. And so they actually said to me, my editor was funny. She goes, I know this sounds terrible, but eco-anxiety is trending. You know, that's how marketing companies work at this point, like what are the trends? And we would really love to have a book that helps people deal with feelings of eco-anxiety in ways that are really hopeful and inspiring. Not another book that is basically prescriptions of how each and every one of us has to reduce our carbon footprint or like, you know, go off grid, or another book that basically shames and blames us into feeling like what we're doing currently is the problem, right? But a book that actually inspires us to see that there's a more positive, hopeful future. And my editor said, I think you're the person to write this, because I remember in Everyday Plant Magic, in the intro section, you shared a lot about your story with eco-anxiety and how creating with plants really helped you. And we had to take a lot of that out when we edited that book. But I remember reading it, and I think you'd be the person to write this book. So what's interesting about that, if you're someone who is an author, if you're wanting to be an author, if you're working with traditional publishing houses, don't doubt when you actually have to cut things out of your book. Don't doubt how that might come back around in another way, because that's definitely what happened with Self-Care for Eco-Anxiety. So I sat with my editor. We had a great meeting. We talked about what we wanted the book to be. We created an outline together. My editor was amazing, and she actually wrote the book proposal with my outline. So a lot less work on my part for this book. And within a few short months, I was writing the book. So this was a book that really came to me from a need that was being asked of me. It wasn't necessarily the book that I was like, I really want to write this. But once I got into it, I was like, ooh, I really want to write this.
Amazing.
So that's kind of how the book came to be. In terms of why self-care for eco-anxiety, my story is one of eco-anxiety. And I guess I can define it as eco-anxiety, but honestly, it's just kind of anxiety, you know? And while this book focuses on eco-anxiety in particular because of just the state of the world, the practices that I share in this book can be powerful for all forms of anxiety. Doesn't just have to be anxiety related to the environment. Because as I don't know if either one of you have ever dealt with anxiety, but anyone who has dealt with anxiety, it's not like it contains boundaries of like, I'm only going to be anxious over this one thing. It's like, no, it ripples out into all aspects of your life, right? Which is kind of why it can feel so all-encompassing, which is why it's so important that we have lots of self-care practices to help us bring ourselves back to what's true. Because when we're in that anxiety spiral and that anxiety ripple, we are not actually connected with truth in those moments. So I hope I answered the question.
Yeah, you go ahead, Rashida.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I was going to say for sure. And then just what you were saying, like to talk about anxiety, just in its simplest terms, you know, we're not connected to our truth. And that is a huge statement. And, you know, really looking into that. And I know for me, when I get anxious, yeah, nothing is valid. Like nothing is like going to help bring me back. But having that one statement, like, what is my truth in this moment? You know, how can I, come back to myself. I mean, I think that's really huge. But anxiety, it doesn't make sense sometimes, you know, just when you're outside of it and you're looking and you're like, why was I just so anxious? Yes. And yeah. I don't know.
I love what you just shared about anxiety.
Right,
not
it does create ripples.
And I actually understand why that is. And I think you guys were as well.
Everything
I know
was
both
okay.
Of you
now all of a sudden there's issues
work
or problems where you're
your
just
intuition.
Super worried about
anxiety
that,
is
again,
almost like the shadow side
aren't
to
true.
Intuition.
So all thank right? you for sharing that.
So when we think about intuition and we get intuitive information, it's not logical. It doesn't make sense. Right? It comes in really fast. Psychic energy is extremely quick. It comes in really fast. It's typically at a high frequency, so it's moving pretty quickly. And it doesn't make sense. Most of us who are highly intuitive, when we don't know how to work with that intuitive energy, it manifests as anxiety. Because if we think about the energy frequency itself, anxiety is fast-paced energy. It moves quickly. It comes in fast. It moves quickly. Psychic energy is fast-paced energy. It comes in fast, it moves quickly, right? Once we learn how to move that energy through our body, not to get it trapped up in the head, then we start getting those like somatic things, right? Like we start understanding, oh, this twinge means this. Oh, I'm receiving this. Like, oh, I'm seeing something. I'm hearing something. But when we don't know that and it just spirals in the head, which is what anxious energy does, it literally becomes this very attractive, like really magnetic energy that just spirals and spirals and spirals and pulls things in and keeps things moving really fast. But because we're kind of keeping it in the head, we keep trying to make sense of it, but it doesn't make sense. It was never meant to make sense. So I love what you just shared about, like, it doesn't make sense.
Oh, just the part that does make sense to me about anxiety is that it comes from this wish to survive, right? Like we have maybe scenarios in our heads of like what could happen, right? We have these scenarios because we want to be prepared for whatever might happen, right? Even if we're fantasizing something that will never, ever happen, it's like we want to be vigilant in a way. And I think that's just part of human nature, but it does spiral out of control. But when it comes to eco-anxiety, I feel like that's just amplified so much because the survival of the human race, the survival of like many animal species, plant species is completely dependent on this. And, you know, sometimes I think anxiety is our way of asserting some sort of control in a situation where we have very little, to be honest. And I relate this to being a yoga teacher. Like, you know, it's like sometimes I have to remind people like, okay, it's okay to let go right now. And you thinking about something isn't keeping that thing protected or yourself safe. So I guess that being said, we talked about anxiety and intuition and it being something that makes sense and that doesn't make sense. Do you think that everyone on some level feels this eco-anxiety? And is in some ways the anxiety healthy because it keeps Mother Earth at the forefront of our minds?
Yeah.
But also, how do we like function?
Yes, I love this question. And I have like, yes and all over this question. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think, and I speak about this in the introduction to the book, Self-Care for Eco-Anxiety. I think a certain level of eco-anxiety is literally us just paying attention. Like, I think that most people who actually care about the environment, care about nature, care about what's happening, have a low-lying level of eco-anxiety at this point. And that's because we care. It's because we were like, hey, actually, something's wrong. This isn't right. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, wrong and right, very human wording right there. But when we think about us living, co-living on a planet, cohabitating with other species, with the planet itself, we are not acting respectfully. We are not acting as if we are cohabitating with a myriad of other species, and that we are actually dependent upon this living planet, gorgeous living planet that we live upon. So I do think that there is a level of eco-anxiety that is just strictly us paying attention and knowing this is a problem and it needs us to be the solution. What the difference is, and I actually speak to this in one of the last self-care practices in the book, which I call radically accepting this moment. You know, there's that Buddhist saying that states, you know, pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. And so I think about eco-anxiety in that way, in a lot of ways, like paying attention to what's happening in the world, paying attention to climate change, deforestation, plastic pollution, all the things, there's pain there, right? Like, of course there's pain there. But deciding that we're going to get anxious about it, staying in that energy of it's also terrible, it's also terrible, it's also terrible, we're all going to die, like there's no solutions, right? Like, that's the suffering. And that's a choice. That is actually a choice. Now, it doesn't feel like it's a choice when we're deep in the throes of it, but using a lot of the self-care practices I share in here, we can start remembering, wait, there is a choice I have here. There is a choice, just like there's a choice we have every single day when it comes to some of our actions and the impacts they have on the planet. There's always choice. So with eco-anxiety, one thing to note is like, hey, if this hurts me, if what I see happening to the world, to the planet, to other species hurts me, actually that's worth celebrating. That's worth commending. That's worth me loving on the fact that I love Earth in this way. But if my pain for Earth is getting so big that I do not see a solution, that I cannot see a vision for a greater future, okay, maybe there's something that can use a little addressing within me so that I can see that there's solutions available, because there are so many solutions available. So, yeah, that's how I think we function.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that so much. And like immediately when you said, when I can, you know, see that there are solutions available, I'm like, well, I want to know what solutions do you have? You know, not all the things, right? Yeah. But if you just had someone who is like resonating with this conversation, they're like, you know, I occasionally, feel really, really down. And I basic. Sometimes just think that,
because I think it's
in
really important.
300 like, years, like, you know, no one's going to be left because of what
Which
we're
is
doing
that,
right
if
now.
You go
type
outside
of situation, like,
and you love
what is something that
nature.
Someone can do to
you
address
go out there,
this?
You love the
sort of feeling,
take a deep breath, and you're just like, oh, this is the best. You feel the sunshine on your skin. You take it in. You absorb it. You send love to your trees. Mm-hmm. You go for walks. You every now and then maybe spread some bird seed. You know, or not. Who cares? You like the birds, right? Like. That alone, that relationship of love and appreciation, that's where it all starts. That's where it has to start. And so for self-care for eco-anxiety, my whole goal for this book was actually to help people return to a relationship of love, creativity, reciprocity with Earth. Because I think a lot of times, especially when we go into books that are about like, saving the planet or, you know, the issues regarding environmental destruction, it can feel like a lot more of like, now I have to do this and this and this. And oh, all this other stuff I'm doing is bad. And it actually increases shame and blame and guilt. And that actually doesn't impact our positive behaviors toward the planet. I know when I was getting my master's degree in marine biodiversity and conservation back in 2007, they were all about like the doom and gloom approach. Like just teach them how terrible everything is because that's going to light a fire under their ass. And I literally, like that was my first real bad bout with anxiety. Like that was the first time I ended up having to get on anxiety medication. I had insomnia. Like it took me down. I almost quit the program.
Jeez.
I literally was like, well, what's the point? What's the point of this? Is there any solution? Right? So I'm a case study for how that doesn't work, but I stuck with it, right? Stuck with it. And then, you know, got work at a place like Monterey Bay Aquarium, which is all about like being more solution oriented. But yeah, like the shame and blame really doesn't help. So first starting off with this relationship of love, of appreciation, then comes the reciprocity. And it can be really easy. I mean, even things like taking your coffee grounds and instead of sticking them down the garbage disposal or in a plastic bag that's just going to sit in a landfill, spreading them around some of the bases of some of your plants, especially if you have like blueberry plants or roses, they tend to like some of the acidity of it, right? So composting your coffee grounds, starting off with even doing some composting, some rainwater catchment. We don't get a lot of rain here in Southern California or like the West Coast. Well, I should just say Southern California in the summertime or the Southwest. But I know in a lot of places, summertime gets huge deluges of rain, like those summer storms, you know, starting off with even putting some big old pots and buckets outside to catch rainwater and then water your houseplants or water your garden with it. Like being able to start growing some of your own food, starting off with even just an herbal garden, getting involved in regenerative agriculture through community supported farms, CSA boxes, community gardens, farmers markets. I mean, there's just so much. Like there's so much we can do. There's so much that people already do. One of my favorite things lately is also doing more clothing swaps and purchasing clothing more from like ThredUp or going to the kids consignment stores as opposed to purchasing new clothing, because fashion has a huge impact on climate change and environmental destruction. So that's a really fun way. And that's one of the ways I share in the book as well. Even like, I know this is going to sound really simple, but I want it to be simple. But I even see going outside and intentionally breathing, like doing breath work outdoors, or even just doing breath work with some of my houseplants as an act of giving back. because I'm very intentionally giving my exhales to the plants, who very intentionally give their exhales to me. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I love that. Raquel, I really like that. And when you were first saying, I'm going to start very basic here, when you said just simply going outside and, you know, showing your appreciation and giving love, what that means to me really on a, just like you said, basic level is getting present with what's around you and in front of you and having that gratitude and appreciation. And then from that place of presence, love, and gratitude, we can either think of, or actively participate in some of these solutions that you talked about. And I feel like if we come from that place, because like you said, there's so many solutions, like you just named a ton of them. It can be overwhelming to think about like all the things that we have to do. But if we're coming from that first basic grounded place, I think we will find the solutions that will resonate the most with us because we don't have to do it all. And like, just even some of the things you said, I'm like, yeah, I would do that. I could totally do that. So I really appreciate you kind of like just breaking that down a little bit. And I know Lorne and I talk about this a lot, just like how important being present and in the moment is, you know, honestly, how we can live our lives the best way by being present. And it comes back to that.
So beautiful.
Space of just.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, the present moment,
you know, that added little splash of like love,
dealing with anxiety.
All you do in a day is just to give back and give your love to the major environment around you. Like you're doing huge things.
Having an anxious moment is coming to your senses, right? Like, what is something I can see? What is something I can feel? What is something I can smell? What is something I can taste? If it's safe, you know, like really getting into this present moment, because the way anxiety works is it keeps us very much either in fear of the future or very enmeshed and trapped in the past, right? Like it doesn't really allow us to be in the power that truly is available to us in the present moment. And I agree. I think that one of the reasons nature is so powerfully restorative for us is because it really helps us come back to the present moment. And, you know, when we're talking about anxiety, also, we're really talking about the nervous system in so many ways. And with self-care for eco-anxiety, the way that I organize the practices in this book are kind of organized into three major themes. The first themes are connecting with nature. So before we even think about, like, I need to give back to nature, let's just reconnect. Let's go back to that basic point that we talked about, which is just like, gosh, I love this planet. Wow, I'm so lucky to be here. Wow, look at all this amazing beauty and function and magic, truly, like magic that's all around. So we connect and then we move into self-care practices that are all about creativity, making art, decorating your home with biophilic design, bringing in plants, bringing in stones, bringing in wood, feathers, all that kind of stuff, even cooking, even planting a garden. All of that is co-creation. And then finally, we move into some self-care practices that are really about reciprocity, giving back to earth as we also give to ourselves. And I did that very strategically because I really wanted people moving into a place of giving back from a place of connection and co-creation, not from a place of fear, shame, or blame. That was like super, super important to me. And the first few practices I share in the connection are all about nervous system regulation. So they're like somatic practices to deal with flight, fight, freeze, and fawn. Because ultimately, eco-anxiety is a nervous system dysregulation. So if we can start learning how we can co-regulate our nervous system with Earth, we're already having a huge impact on the symptoms of eco-anxiety.
It seems like a big part of your process is maybe helping people somatically, like fully understand themselves as a part of nature.
I love that.
And that connection with nature and the appreciation for it, I think, is a good starting place for the pathway to this self-care, because our nervous system acts this way because we're part of nature. That's how it works. It's how we survive. And it seems like this path could lead to a lot more self-love too, because how can we fully respect and appreciate ourselves if we're not, you know, appreciating and respecting where we come from and the system that we're a part of? I'd love to go back to, like, why do we need to connect to nature? Where is the disconnect? And I'll share, like, you know, my daughter's 3.5. We spend a lot of time outside. She is really curious about everything. And I see her and she goes, and my name is Gemma. Her name is Gemma. You know, we're part of little nature groups, and she and her little friends are just present and curious about everything they come across. Where does the disconnect begin? So I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this, but
yeah,
I see so many people who just like seem totally separate from what's around them.
I'm going to feel into that one because I feel like, I mean, in some ways I feel like that answer can be different for like lots of different people, but I do think there's a common theme in that I'm going to go to my guides for, because I'm like, my brain is like, I don't know the answer to that. If I knew, man, maybe things would be different, right? Like if we knew the answer to that, maybe we could address it more. But let's see what my guides want to share about that.
Please share whatever's in the happiest, highest, greatest good regarding where the disconnect comes
from. Okay. What my guides are sharing with me is that it starts when we start thinking more about what others think about us than what we think about ourselves. So that to me feels like it's around like 4th, 5th grade. Like when all of a sudden all the other thoughts start mattering more to us than our own, that's when, at least what my guide shared, like that's when the big disconnect happens. But what does that have to do? Like how can nature, why does it come out in nature in that way? Please share with us more about this disconnect with nature. Oh, okay. So what they shared is that at that point, society starts telling them that you need things that are beyond what is already being provided to you. So it's like you get this illusion that you need more than what just exists. So that's what they just shared with me. And I've never thought about that before. So, okay. So now that we know that, what do you want us to do with that information? Can you share with us more about what we do with this information now that we know this? They just keep sharing with me that you're, I don't know if imprints is the right word, but that's what they were sharing. It's like your imprints matter most. I'm not sure. What's with the word imprints? Can you share with me more about this word imprints? They're saying that nature imprints upon each of us something different that we then reflect back out. And so when we stop caring about what our the way nature is trying to imprint upon us, and we start caring more about like how society is trying to imprint upon us, we lose the thread of our own meaning. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really deep.
It is deep. It's deep.
And I see that in what they said about kind of start that age where you start caring more about maybe the perception of you than your own thoughts and feelings.
That's very,
you know,
deep.
Society, or culture, advertising, whatever it might be, really exploits that.
Yeah.
It sees that as their in, right? To really take control over people's psyches and hearts.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess the reason I asked the question was kind of personal for me because I'm intentionally trying to raise a child who is connected with nature. And it's like, what are the obstacles to look out for? How do I help nurture this for life? You know?
Yeah.
You already are.
And I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. And I'm sure you too, Rachel, think about these things with your children.
Yeah. I think one of the things I notice with my kids right now, especially because they're like 12 and 10, you know, so they're a little bit older, is that if I don't force it, right? Like, because, you know, especially at this age, when you start forcing things, it's like they're just going to rebel. So it's more of along the lines of like, I try to be more of like the modeler, you know? So like, I go out every morning and do my morning grounding and I always invite them. And some mornings they come out, but listen, they're 12 and 10. They get up and they're like, where's my Chromebook? You know? Oh, and it's summer. But they are really starting, especially my 12-year-old, really notices when she has been inside too long or when she's like been on a screen, like she can really tell. And I see her do it and I love it. She goes outside and she does like a periphery of our periphery. Is that, that's not a word. Perimeter. Periphery. Yeah. You know, when we go into intuitive places, like words just kind of like go away and then get jumbled and all the things. So she'll like walk the little and we live in the suburbs, so we don't have a huge space, but we have jam-packed our little space
with them all together.
Blackberries and passion fruit and fig trees and avocado trees. And so she likes to go around and she likes to check on how things are growing. Like, it's one of her favorite things. She'll just go walk around and she's like, oh, we've got 10 passion fruit growing on the vine, Mom. Or, ooh, 4 strawberries. Look like we'll be ready to pick them tomorrow. And because her favorite thing is picking fresh fruits and fresh produce and like eating it immediately. So I've noticed that she really does this kind of self-regulation where she just takes herself outside and just kind of looks and appreciates and notices how things are growing. My younger one, I have to work on that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have that same like self-regulation like innately. So we're kind of working on that in ways that don't feel like we're forcing her. Because she's also my Scorpio. So she's just like resistant in a really cute, dramatic way.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I actually had another question for you like around this topic. So, you know, when your guides share the word like imprints and, you know, us not really mm-hmm. seeing that on us, you know, those of us that are disconnected. If again, this is resonating with someone or even like ourselves, we are connected. I feel like the three of us.
So simple.
But how can we like cultivate that a little bit more? How can we kind of rediscover, and, like, uncover
sit on the ground and just breathe, like literally
with that.
That and I mean, you don't have to go outside. You can meditate inside and still connect in with nature. And in fact, I teach people how to do this, how to ground from anywhere, how to connect in with your mother tree while sitting at your computer, right? Like, it's important to know that we have that access point as well, but you're never going to, you're always going to get better prana. You're going to get more of the energy if you actually go outside and immerse yourself in it. And when it comes to being in nature, I mean, there's so much that happens when we allow ourselves to just be in nature. Now, there's a couple of things that have to happen first to make sure that we can get to these places of restoration. Like, we want to make sure we're someplace safe. And in fact, in the book, in the creativity section, one of the practices I share, I'm trying to find it right now, has to do with creating your own restorative space. And this goes off. Yeah, there it is. It's practice 22. It's on page 64. It's called Create Your Nature Restoration Spot. And this is based off the attention restoration theory that was proposed by Stephen and Rachel Kaplan, who were kind of like environmental psychologists. So they did a lot of study about like biophilic design and really did a lot of looking into how when we actually have like a view of nature, the brain is actually more productive. So they were really looking at like kind of like human productivity, and it was kind of counterintuitive. This was like the 70s and 80s, I want to say. And they were finding that all these like human built spaces, cubicles, all of that actually decreases productivity, and more nature views and nature influence increases productivity. But there are a couple of things that you need to have in place so that it can be restorative. You need to be away, right? Like, you need to be away from your daily tasks. So if you're just going outside and all you're doing is looking around, oh, I got to weed there, I gotta clean out that bed, like, that's not super restorative, right? Like, that's just gonna put you back in your to-do list. You also want there to be a level of fascination, so things that kind of get your eye going. So maybe there's some bird feeders and so different birds come, or there's like a milkweed plant and there's caterpillars on it and there's butterflies flying by, so there's things kind of moving in and out, so it keeps you kind of interested. You also want there to be an extent, and what they mean by extent is that it feels comfortable. You can sit comfortably for a while. You're not like, oh, is there a coyote in the bush back there? You know what I mean? Which is going to activate that hypervigilance. And then compatibility, which is just feeling like I want to be here. Like, I actually want to be in this space. So if you're in a space that has all of those things, which anytime you kind of go sit by a lake or by the ocean or even in the forest somewhere, all of those things are typically present.
Right.
Then you can kind of get to this place where the sympathetics, the body's nervous system kind of goes into a very regulatory place. So a lot of times when we talk about the nervous system and we talk about dysregulation, a lot of what we need in those moments is co-regulation. The nervous system does best when it is able to regulate itself with others, right? Like a baby up against the mother's heartbeat. And then all of a sudden, okay, that heartbeat. And I think sometimes as humans, like we want that human co-regulation, but sometimes it might not be available to us, right? Or sometimes the humans that are available to us are not the ones we can co-regulate with in that moment. And that's where our relationship with nature is so vital, because nature is always there for us to co-regulate with. I mean, when we're grounding, when we're really allowing our energetic roots to extend into earth and breathe that in,
it literally feels like I'm
sinking my heartbeat with the earth's heartbeat, which is what co-regulation is all about, right? And so when we're in nature and we're taking deeper breaths and we're being more still, the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems go into more homeostasis, more balance. And I think often when we talk about, especially anxiety, we're often talking about more of a sympathetic nervous system response, which is going to be more of that fight or flight. But there's also levels of sympathetic dysregulation in there as well, especially when we move into freeze or fawn. So freeze is when we're like paralyzed. And I think eco-anxiety can often make us feel paralyzed. It can often make us feel like this problem is so big, nothing I do is going to have an impact. And it can lead to some apathy, which to me is very much kind of like a freeze response, or it can even lead to depression, which is a complete freeze response. Then there's also the fawn response, which is kind of the people pleasing, like put everyone else's needs first. And I do think that there is a level of fawning that we are collectively experiencing with eco-anxiety, which is that we keep kind of pushing off, like, this is someone else's responsibility in some ways. I mean, I think there's some truth in that. I think that it doesn't help us to be like, each and every one of us, it's our fault, because ultimately we do need the corporations and the governments to create the big systemic change that's actually going to change things. Like, we need them involved. But I think that the fawn response keeps us in this place of just allowing the systems to keep going as they are, because we've kind of released any of our own onus, any of our own like power or ability to create change. And that's a parasympathetic response. So we want to be able to actually move into a little bit more action, move into a place of more empowerment to decrease anxiety from that space. So that's why, even though anxiety can typically be considered more of a fight or flight response, we know anxiety has lots of different iterations. And so for some people, or even for those of us who sometimes we feel really flighty with it, in other moments we might feel really freezy with it. And we're going to need to kind of bring up different techniques within ourselves to help us move through that. So for example, if we're feeling really flighty, like really like, I got to run away from this, like a great somatic practice is actually letting yourself do like a walk in place into a big like run in place, like let yourself actually go through that moment of like running, racing, moving away from it, just so your body can complete that. Whereas if you're feeling more of that fawning or freeze response, doing some activities, one of my favorite things to do is I imagine myself as a seedling. So I get like really, really small and tight on the ground. And then I imagine myself literally like spreading roots and growing and growing and growing and taking up more and more space and literally coming from like a little ball on the ground up into a big tree and just taking up space. And those are great somatic practices.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for going through that in detail and showing how this manifests through each of us. And thank you for providing so many wonderful coping mechanisms and tools in your book. I'll just remind our besties to please go out and buy Rachelsworth. It's already out, right?
Yeah, it's out. It's out.
It's out.
You can find it. Yeah, wherever books are sold, really.
Yeah. And I really wish we could keep talking for another hour about this, because I feel like there's so many places to go with it. But I know your time is precious and you have a client coming up. So I will just offer some space to let us know what you have going on, how to work with you, where to find you.
Oh, thank you. Well, also, let me state, if we ever want to do a round two or even talk about nature, nervous system, intuition, like, I would love to have more conversations with the both of you. I mean, yeah, well, like, we could talk for hours.
Have you back again.
Yeah. And in terms of where people can find me, I'm most active on Instagram, and you can find me there at rinfinitenaturerachel. You can also find me on my website, which is rinfinitenature.co. I offer one-to-one sessions, which include intuitive sessions, which I call spirit sessions. I also offer energy sessions. I'm a Reiki master, and we do utilize a lot of nature's energies in my sessions. And I'm also a coach, so I offer coaching sessions, and I help people connect with and cultivate their own intuitive gifts through energetic, magical relationships with nature. I also offer a group coaching program on intuition called Intuitive Magic. Doors will be opening to that in August for September. And I've got something really exciting I'm working on right now behind the scenes, which I'll be announcing in a few months. But it's related to my moon content, because I also am a moon messenger, and I share about the energies of every new moon and full moon. And so I'm just kind of building some fun stuff around that as well right now behind the scenes.
So exciting. Yeah. We can't wait to see what else you are creating. And like Lauren said, we loved having you on here. I'm sure maybe in another year we'll have you back, because your wisdom and knowledge is around this is just amazing, and I think it's needed. So thank you so much, Raquel. Aww,
thank you.
Thank you. We've asked you before, but we do want to just make sure. Will you be our bestie?
Oh my gosh, yes, please. I would love to be your spiritual bestie. We all need more spiritual besties, for sure. Wait, before we go, I know, and then we realize you have to go, but can I ask you guys, what does spirituality mean to you?
You want to keep this short?
Yeah.
I feel like for me, it's changing. Like, I think how I perceive it changes, or the way I'm able to communicate it. But I'll put it really simply right now. It's presence.
Mm. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's almost Shida? The same thing. If we're keeping it short, it's finding the everyday moments and magic in my life right now at this moment is what spirituality is to me.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. I love both of your answers so much, because both of your answers are also the remedy to eco-anxiety.
Mm.
Like, spirituality is like the medicine to what we're experiencing in so many ways.
Yeah. I think I found a lot of this like because of my own anxiety. So yeah. It's what works. It's what works for me.
Yeah. Agreed.
I'm sure, Rashida. Agreed. You felt
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Rachel. Thank you, besties, for listening. Please hit us up on Instagram, hit Rachel up on Instagram to continue this conversation. We love you all. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Rashida. And we will chat soon.
Bye. Thank you so much for joining us for this incredible episode. If you loved it, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and tell all your besties about us.
You can also connect with us on Instagram at Your Spiritual Besties Podcast. And be sure to say hello and share your thoughts about the episode. Love you, bestie. Talk soon.